Okay, so this morning we are having a workshop on healthy boundaries and why they are important for your children. I am Faye Wilbur. I'm a social worker. I work at the Jewish Board of Family and Children's Services Borough Park Outpatient Mental Health Clinic, and I have a private practice. The definition of boundaries is something that indicates bounds or limits. We talk about the definition, we talk about why they're important, and how we help children develop boundaries. Yiddishkeit and Gemara and Tanakh talk about boundaries. We have property lines, what we own, what we don't own. We have kashrus, what we can and cannot eat. What of those things we can eat, we break it down even further to how we are allowed to prepare it, how we eat it, when we eat it. Then we have in relationships yichud and taras and mishpacha. We have havdalah, which delineates mavdil ben kodesh l'chol or l'choshech yisrael la'amim. That talks about all the different variables in boundaries. We're here to talk this morning about relationships and helping children develop healthy boundaries. Good morning.
Good morning.
So that they can grow up to be healthier adults. The boundaries have been taught to children since they are born. You help children know this is your, these are your clothes and this is your toys. You say this is bedtime. Hi, welcome.
Hi.
This is good morning. Now's the time we get up in the morning. Now's breakfast time. Or no, you can't wear your bathing suit today because there's snow outside. You as a parent are setting a boundary. You're teaching your child that there are some things, that there is a time and a place for everything, that there are times we can do things and times we can't do things. We talk about teaching children that this is mommy and tati's room or mommy and daddy's room. How do they learn that? Well, you have been saying this is your space, this is where you can go, this is where you can't go. Boundaries are about safety on many different levels. So when we think about, and this is not, for those of you who entered, interrupt me. It's better if it's a discussion. I don't plan to talk for the whole hour. when you think about the kitchen is full of boundaries. As adults, we can use a stove. Children, until a certain age, are just not allowed to touch the fire. So you're teaching them that there are some things that are safe, some things that adults are allowed to do, some things that children are allowed to do. You're letting them know that as we grow up, we add responsibilities to our own lives, and we need to take responsibility for that. We can't do things in a way that is unsafe for ourselves or unsafe for anyone else. So when they're little, if they touch the stove, then you quickly pull their hands away. As they get older, you might say, okay, now you can help me cook, or you can help me bake. So you can make the batter, and you can put the cookies on the tray. But this year, I'm going to still put the cookie platter, cookie tray into the oven. Maybe next year, we'll let you put the cookie tray in the oven. And you're teaching them that, yes, as a five-year-old, you can't put the tray into the oven. It's too dangerous. You need to let them know what's dangerous and what's not. We need to let children know that in relationships, there are people that are safe and people that are not, and people that they don't know if they're safe or not. So I noticed on the wall they have how to deal with a bully. We're in a second grade classroom. So we teach our children that peers are safe. Peers are people that are important in our lives, that we let them into our lives, they can enhance our lives, but there are some behaviors where people have overstepped the boundary. So if you're your daughter or your son and you have a play date, and the play date is scheduled from 10 to 12 this morning, mommy or tati are going to pick you up at 12 o'clock because the boundary is noon. We're not leaving you there till 4 in the afternoon. That's not respectful. We need to respect other people's time. That's a boundary. That's letting them know that the same way you are going to respect somebody else's boundary, other people are expected to respect your boundaries. When you talk about children and toys, you're like, you have to share. Sharing is not fun. Children don't want to share. I don't think adults necessarily want to share all the time either. But there are things that you can keep just for yourself, and there are other things you do share. So you can say to your child, if this is your special toy, you can decide when you want to share it or now. You set up that boundary. The earlier we teach children how to set the boundary, the better off they are because they're more equipped. They know how they can handle establishing boundaries and that it's allowed. One of the primary goals of teaching children decision-making and boundary establishing is we're giving them the power to make decisions for themselves, which is something all parents want to do because you don't want to raise a child who is completely dependent on you, who is going to turn to you for everything for the rest of their lives. That's not a healthy adult. So when they have a friend over and they are fighting over this special, like the new Hanukkah toy that's they're not sharing yet, as the parent, you would say, why don't we put that away before your friend comes so that you can, for next time, so that you can avoid fighting. The boundary here is put it away, it's out of sight, nobody else is therefore going to want to borrow it. When we talk to kids about SNEAS, it's the same kind of thing. Our clothes set up a boundary. This is how we present ourselves to the world. This is how we want people to see us. This is how we want people to view us. They're not allowed to remove our sweater if we don't want them to remove our sweater. I'll give you an example. When I do therapy with children, we'll use art. So I always make them wear a smock so I don't get in trouble with the parents. And I will not, like if they're little children, I will not button the buttons unless I say to them, would you like help with the buttons? Because I want them to know that they have the right to say, yes, you can help me. Or no, I want to do it by myself. And as little as they are, if they say no, we can spend 15 minutes while they struggle to get those buttons buttoned. But it's their right to say no. And it's important for children to know that they do have that right to say no. So then you have to balance being respectful and saying no, which is the other part of it. They're in a classroom. What are the rules of the classroom? Rules are boundaries. We're not driving through red lights. The boundary is we have to stop at a red light. The rule in the classroom is you have to sit at your desk in the circle. You can't go wandering around unless it's recess time or Morris said you're allowed, or how do you live within the boundaries established by an outside person if you don't really feel like it? Because they're not always going to feel like it. So those are skills you as parents are going to give your children to establish these boundaries. Can you think of some of the ways you're helping your children learn boundaries?
7:30 is going to sleep time.
That's right. 7:30 is going to sleep time. Exactly. And you're also sometimes going to teach them that boundaries are flexible. So you're going to say, tonight we have a chasana, and therefore 7:30 is not bedtime tonight. It might mean that you have to take a rest in the afternoon, you have to come home from school and rest for an hour, or you didn't go to school and you have to rest a little bit. But yes, 7:30 is bedtime with exception. So there you're also teaching them that they can discriminate, that there are some things that are more special than others.
But also they also have to know how to negotiate their own boundaries.
Yes.
For instance, 7:30 is going to sleep. But mommy, I didn't finish my homework. I need to stay up 15 more minutes. It's okay.
Right.
You have a good enough reason.
Right. And they, and in that case, he or she also learns how to ask. So they're negotiating and they're learning communication skills at the same time. They're not tantruming and screaming, but I didn't finish my homework and I'm going to get in trouble. Because that would not get the same result. That might get the result of, too bad, you should have been more responsible. But I need 15 minutes. That would get an okay. Right. Some of the other ways we're teaching kids boundaries? They're saying please. They're asking for permission to do things so that they know there are some things they're not allowed to do without permission. Please, can I take another nosh? You have to ask. It's not just a free-for-all.
Love this, the preface. I know you're going to say no, but...
Right. Right. So they're anticipating the no and then...
Right.
almost adding in that you should now feel guilty.
I don't know how to react to that stuff, because I do 50-50. Sometimes I say yes and stuff. You're right. The answer is no. I'm a customer.
Right. Right.
You think they're smart enough to induce guilt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
your 3-year-old is old enough to... Right. They also, they're testing limits all the time. Because what can they get away with? So they will, a tantrum. Why do kids have tantrums? Because they think it's going to achieve their goal. They're going to get what they want. Now, if you're thinking short-term, give in to the tantrum because they'll stop tantruming. If you're thinking long-term, ignore that tantrum or you're doomed. Because if at 3 they're tantruming, kicking, screaming, carrying on for whatever, anosh, then at 16 or 17 when they get their driver's license, they might not throw themselves on the floor and kick and scream, but they're still going to want a Lexus. And that's much more expensive than a second anosh. So it's really important to teach them what's acceptable, what's not, how you negotiate, how you ask for it. May I please go to my friend's house? Well, it's a school night. Why do you need to go tonight? Well, I want to play. But you know the rule. You're not allowed to play on a school night. So maybe they'll say, but tomorrow we have no tests or a half a day or it's Hanukkah or whatever. And then you're letting them know that as the parents, you're making the decision. And there are rules that, again, that can be negotiated. They knock on doors. It's something like, I'll work with families where no one knocks on doors. No one gives anyone any personal space and respect. So that is a huge problem for people. You know, when I say, well, if there's a door, what do you do? And they'll say, I open it and go in. So what does that feel like if you're sitting in your room having quiet time and someone just barges in? You need to learn that a closed door means you're not welcome until you're invited. Because we don't want people to just barge in on our children on whatever level. So that can be grabbing their pencil and saying, I want that pencil. That's the cutest pencil I ever saw. Too bad it's now mine. Or someone who will say to the child, oh no, you're allowed to get in my car because I'm going your way, and they don't know this person, and they might go, and you need to let them know that they have the right to say no. So, clear limits. Showers. You don't get out of the shower. Well, 3-year-olds get out of the shower and run around naked.
That's true.
Because that's really fun. Right. And you say, as a parent, we don't really do that. That's not sneeze. You have to put on your underwear, you have to put on your pajamas, you have to put on your... whatever it is you're saying. But you're teaching them that some families will say, yes, you can run naked from the bathroom to your bedroom. That way they get a little bit of what they want, but they're not running around the whole house doing a little dance. Other families will say, you know, in our family, and that's an important phrase to learn, because different families have different rules. So your kids, not at 3, but at 7 and 8, they're probably already saying, but the Virus family says it's okay to do da-da-da-da-da. Or Dovitz family does X, Y, and Z. So now you're teaching them boundaries. So when you're in the Virus house, maybe you'll say you can eat as much nosh as her mother gives you, even though it's more than I allow. Or you'll say, I know they have different rules. They're not ours. And when you're there, even then, you need to follow our rules. So it's a parenting decision, and you're letting them know that they're part of the process, that they have power, and that they can negotiate. Can you think of other examples of boundaries that come up in the house? Eating from somebody else's plate. In some families, it's okay to eat from somebody else's plate. Oh, mommy, can I taste your salad? Sure, you can stick your fork in and take it. But they also have to know that I had a friend who was on a date and the guy stuck his fork into her plate. That didn't really go over big. It was the first and last because she was just repulsed by that behavior. So there, it's a boundary that's okay within a family, but it's not okay outside of a family. And understanding that, even as they go from one class to another, or within the same day, you know, the Hebrew teacher might say one thing and the English teacher will say something else. Everybody has rules and you have to accommodate. When you have boundaries, you also are teaching flexibility, which is so important in life in general, because rigid people have a really hard time. And rigid rules and rigid boundaries are such a stress, not only on the person who establishes it, but he or she is also enforcing it for themselves, and it just makes life much more difficult. So, I mean, the extreme example of rigid boundaries is a person who will only do the same thing, the same way, every time, every day. It is really so hard for a person.
How do you break that? My son has PDD-NOS, so everything is black and white. So if I made a rule about no hitting, and he sees another child hit somebody else, all of a sudden he's the world policeman. Mm-hmm. Because he's knows that's his boundary,
right.
But he's trying to enforce it on other people.
So there, you have to talk to him about, we don't hit, and we don't approve of hitting, but it's also not your job. So you can say, you have a Rebbe, and if they're hitting in the schoolyard, your job during recess is to play. The Rebbe's job is to keep everyone safe. Because you don't want him to be telling everybody how to behave, because then he's going to be very lonely, because people are going to really dislike him very much.
So his answer to me on the school bus was, but we're not supposed to bother the bus driver when other kids
right.
are fighting, so I came in between the two of them so that they wouldn't hurt each other.
So then they hurt him.
As a result of that, another kid now piled on. So now it's four people rather than the original two, and my son breaking that up. Then there was another kid who started up with my son
right.
rebutting in.
Right.
So
his boundary is to take concern for himself. If someone is fighting with him, that's very different than if someone is
right.
fighting with someone else. Now, school buses is a whole discussion by itself. I always encourage parents to have young children be told they should sit at the front of the school bus. Because the back of the school buses, the boys are fighting with each other, the boys are pulling each other's pants down. They're tormenting each other. Forget the language that you never want to hear that your children will learn on the school bus. But school buses in recess, because they're unstructured time, they don't really have rules and boundaries other than don't hurt someone else. And on a school bus, they can't bother the school bus driver. His job is to drive. So the children really are their own enforcers. For lack of another
so
word.
What I told him is, you are responsible only for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't like it last year when other people, you know, said something to you, so you can't be now this other person
right.
to say anything. And when you get off the bus, you go to the preschool principal or your own principal and let them know that those two other children were fighting on the bus so that they don't hurt themselves next time. I said, they're not going to hurt themselves that night. They're not going to hurt themselves that badly that it's going to be so bad. You need to protect yourself and stay in your seat.
Right. Right. That's his boundary. On many levels, that's a healthy boundary. Because they will gang up on him. They'll forget that they were fighting with each other, and they will turn on him. Right. So it sounds like you did the perfect thing. Now, telling the principal has pros and cons, depending on how they handle it.
My son has to tell all, he figures all adults, when he speaks to them, they're on his level, they're going to understand it, and then they're going to act on what he said.
Right.
You know, he's like a little snitch where I can see in the future, the kids are going to hate him and despise him for always snitching.
Right.
How do I?
So then you encourage him to be aware of what's going on, But again, he's not the mashgiach. He has his personal rules. It's not his job to enforce. And that's why there are adults.
But then he's always running to an adult and snitching.
But the adult will find out if these boys are misbehaving on the school bus. Maybe they're also misbehaving in class. So someone will find out that they're boys who act up. It's not healthy for him. His boundary is protecting himself, not taking care of the whole 30 boys on the bus.
So that's what I say to him, is if it's an extreme case of safety, tell the principal. If it's somebody else, two people fighting and it had nothing to do with you, keep your mouth shut, which is also not the right thing.
Well, but it's healthier for him.
It is healthier for him?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're going to retaliate.
Okay.
He will be beaten up if he keeps tattling. Yeah.
Okay.
And part of the reason is you want him to have, like, establishing boundaries is for personal integrity. We are in charge of our own selves. So if someone would hit him or touch him inappropriately, he should tell somebody, because it's about him. And if they start fighting with him or they start taunting children, because children aren't nice necessarily. Fourth, fifth grade girls are notorious for hurting each other's feelings. And when a child has learned from the time they're little that they can say yes and no, that they can voice an opinion, that their opinion might not always be admired, respected, that's okay. They're entitled to think differently from someone else. They don't have to always have the same opinion. That they should trust their own judgment. Now, that is, for some children, for your son, it would probably take longer to trust his own judgment because his judgment is moderately impaired. For other children, you want them to know that they can trust their judgment. So parents now are wonderful. I do workshops for parents on how to teach children to say no and to protect themselves from sexual abuse. And saying to your children from the time they are little pitsies in the bathtub, you know, only mommy and daddy can give you a bath, or only mommy and daddy can change your diaper, and the doctor's allowed to touch you, but when the doctor touches you, then mommy or daddy are in the room with you. You're teaching them a boundary. So that if someone would say anything or do anything to you, to them, they would come to you because you're saying, no one can do this, and if they do, you tell us. So if something would happen to him on the school bus, he would, by the time he's 7 years, right, you said seven?
Yeah.
By the time he's seven, if you've been saying this all those years, he would come to you and say,
100%.
Right.
And every little.
Right. Even other children would do that if you're saying it often enough. Now, don't say to them, the first time it happens, tell me. Because think in a very concrete manner. So if you're concrete and your mother says to you, tell me the first time it happens, and you don't tell her the first time, and then it happens a second time, then as a concrete 5-year-old, you're going to think, uh-oh, now I'm going to be in trouble, because since I didn't tell them the first time, and I waited till the second, now I'm going to be in trouble for not telling. Not, my parents will be glad I finally told them. So just say to children, if anybody touches you in a way you don't like, you need to tell me. And it's even more than that. It's if anybody says or does anything that makes you feel funny, scared, worried, give them language for feelings so that they can express themselves and express their concerns. And it doesn't necessarily only have to be inappropriate touch. It can be if someone says something like, you don't know, but your parents are getting divorced. Well, that's going to make a child incredibly anxious. So they should know that since that made them anxious, they should come to you. And you would say to them, that person has no right to talk about our marriage. This is not their life. We don't talk about other people. I'm glad you told me that this is what they said. And no, it's not true. Now, if it's true, then you deal with it differently. And then you might say, I don't know where along the process you are, but if now they know, so you might as well say, well, we were going to tell you, you know, we're not sure, But you probably see that Mommy and Tati fight or are unhappy, so we're thinking about it. But we love you, and this isn't going to affect how Mommy treats you or Daddy treats you, and you do it that way. But if there, so from that example, if there's information that you think your child needs to know, it's always best to come from you. With adoption, that has happened many times where children are adopted and parents never quite know when is the right time to tell them they're adopted. So it's always better to tell them sooner rather than later, because later they're hearing on the schoolyard or on the school bus. And you don't want information like that coming from a third party.
Kind of another take on that.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the school a lot here helping out
various
things. And my daughter will get very upset. She'll go, so-and-so and so-and-so think you're fat. And, you know, she's more anxious about it than I am. Okay, so how do I tell her, yeah, I am, and I don't care what they think.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy I'm in the school helping your school promote whatever? And she'll go, yeah, but I can still tell that she's hurt. I know kids are always going to be embarrassed about their parents, where they leave them off, what car the parent, you know, I'm realizing that, but I thought that would come on later.
They're very precocious now. Yeah. You should acknowledge that it sounds like she's upset that this person said that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you can say, yes, I weigh more than I should, and maybe I'm fat, but I'm sorry she hurt your feelings, or it sounds like she hurt your feelings. And the other part of that is she might have her feelings hurt on your behalf. So that's why it's important for you to say, and I'm okay with the way I look. You know, I went to the doctor. He said I'm healthy. Whatever. I do exercise. This is what I look like. This is who I am. I'm okay with it.
So you don't have to worry for me, but thank you
right.
for saying.
Right. Because they're going to worry for you. She wants to defend your honor.
Right.
Right. Yes, and your feelings are not hurt by a seven-year-old, but her feelings are because she's seven. Right. So you can also compliment her on her empathy, because that is so empathic to worry about how your feelings are going to be, you know, dealt with. And talk to her about children don't always say nice things, or that even adults don't always say nice things. I mean, I was looking at the teacher's Chafetz Chaim on Midos. You know, people say and do hurtful things. So the other part of the boundaries is you're almost teaching children to have like a dome of protection around them so that they're less sensitive to external I guess criticism is the word that comes to my mind, but it's not always said in a critical way. Sometimes it's just said in a matter-of-fact kind of way, which hurts more. If people with intent are criticizing you, you can usually tell, and then you can dismiss it quicker than if it's an offhand comment. So I don't know how this little girl said your mommy's fat, but saying your mommy's fat is not a nice thing to say. And again, I would hope you, as my daughter, would never say that to somebody, because it hurts people's feelings. Also, having her know that that person violated a respectful line of how we talk to people. Because boundaries is also about how do we speak to people. What do we want for them? What do we want for ourselves? Letting children know, it's interesting, you know, like, there's a time and a place for everything is a very old saying, but going back to what's okay and what's not. So boundaries with food is always a big issue. Parents want to feed children. Children have very little control in their life other than what goes in and what comes out. So it's very easy to start these power struggles over food. And I did a workshop for school administrators last week, and we were talking about children and food. And one teacher said she had a little girl who would come to school and say, "I had to have dinner for breakfast again because I didn't finish it last night." So if you know your child hates whatever that is, torturing them and making them eat dinner for breakfast is not a productive activity. It's saying to them, "I'm going to be rigid. This is what I expect. You have to eat everything on your plate." But they hate, I don't know, chicken cutlets. So don't force them to eat a big chicken cutlet. Give them a little one. Give them ketchup. Give them mustard. Have a side dish that they love. Working within the boundary. Or saying, "You know, I noticed the last three times I made chicken cutlets, you didn't like it. So let's figure out something else. Let's look in the cookbook and figure out a different recipe. Let's try X, Y, and Z." Having them part of the process from a very young age lets them, again, I'm repeating it because it's so important, lets them know that they have a say in their life, that they can say, "This is okay, this is not okay, I want more, I want less." Speaking up in the classroom. Some kids are very shy and will not raise their hand, and even if the teacher calls on them, some then can speak up. Some will whisper. Some will shrink and disappear. They're entitled to that. If it goes to the extreme, then you would have to be concerned. But I'm talking within normal limits. So there are children who are fabulous with their peers and won't talk to adults. Okay, so that's one of their things. If they are able to relate appropriately to peers, then you can practice with them. What is it they're afraid of the adults? What do they think is going to happen? How can they navigate that system? Which adults are okay and which adults are not? That's an important thing for children to know. We don't want them to... We can't teach children that they can trust every Jewish person. A, because not every Jewish person is trustworthy. And B, because it's really easy to dress like a Jewish person and fake it. So that, you know, it always saddens me that we have to teach our children that they have to discriminate, that they can be less trusting than I think children used to be.
And there's something else. The Mogenu program, again, says when they're lost, they should go to another mother who has kids.
Right.
That's also, you know, she could be a show that you don't know what's going to happen. She could all of a sudden adopt your kid out of the store.
Right. But you have to find, they have to trust someone. So the Mogenu program is a program for, it teaches children and parents about safety. Mm-hmm. And schools adopt it into their school. So they have programs for the parents and programs for the children. So everyone is on the same page. And there's a safety kit and it comes with videos. It's a wonderfully designed program from Los Angeles. And
that was one of my questions. My oldest is three and we're kind of trying to... We talk about these things, but it's like hard to explain to a three-year-old. Like,
very.
Even things like... I've heard this. I know this rule. Where, you know, if you're lost, so who do you go? Like, there's a zoo, and sometimes I'll say to him, "Well, if you're lost, who can you go to?" But it's like a 3-year-old is like,
"There's a
I
great
want to see monkey." You know,
right.
There's a great picture book. It's by Rabbi Horowitz.
Right.
Okay, and it's in all of the Safety First. It's called.
There's a Safety First book, and there's also one Yoni and Plony, something about strangers.
They're not like. I also don't want to be him.
This was not a scary area.
Right.
I bought both of them earlier because they're twins, and 3 years later they're still looking at that book and getting different things out of it.
Right.
It's a multi-age book.
Yes, it is.
Because I think another issue is, like, you know, we're talking about whatever, how it came up, but like, that there are rockets falling in Israel.
Right.
And he heard this song that the kids sing about, like, how not to be afraid. If you have to go to bomb shelter, you shouldn't be afraid, whatever.
Right.
And he was saying, so he's like, "So how come, like, let's," he says to me, "let's sing the danger song. Let's sing the song about the children who are in danger." And I'm like, well, that sounds a little crazy. And how do I explain to them? This is, why are they in danger? Why are some children in danger? And I'm like, well, so not everybody's as lucky to live in a safe place. Like, we live in a safe place. But how do you explain to a three-year-old that, like, we also don't live in the, like, you know,
right.
How do you explain to him that, like, it's not, he knows he's not allowed to run down the street, but he's getting to a point where he, I think, can understand.
I think that's great.
But I don't know how to.
Keep talking.
Expand.
Well, keep talking.
I don't want to scare him. I don't want to say people have rockets falling on your house. Cause
right.
I don't want him to think that there's going to be a rocket falling on your house.
Right.
But.
Well, also now with the hurricane, children
right.
are much more aware of loss and tragedy. Because they have classmates who, all of a sudden, they have three new kids in their class because they used to live in Far Rockaway and now they're homeless. So you don't want to frighten him, but it sounds like you're doing a wonderful job because you're talking to him, you're answering his questions. You can say, in Brooklyn, we don't have rockets fall on us, so we're safe. But the things that we have to be afraid of are things like running in the street. So that's why we need to learn to not run in the street. That's why you have to hold Mommy and Tati's hands when you're crossing the street. Because we have, until you're old enough, and again, you're telling him you're going to get skills. Once you're old enough to look both ways and that we're sure, because he's going to think he's old enough now. Yes. Right. So until we're sure that it's safe for you, because that's part of our job. Our job is not only to love you and to give you food and clothes, but our job is to keep you safe. So we're teaching you how to make these decisions, and we're going to keep you safe as long as we need to. And if he's in preschool, show up whenever you want. The teachers have to let you in because you want to make sure he's safe in the preschool. So you are allowed to make unannounced visits, and if the mower gets angry, too bad on her, because you pay tuition and it's your child. And if a preschool, like, we have so many in-home programs, if the door is locked and it takes too long for you to be let in, ask why, ask what that's about. One of the other boundaries, and neither one of you up are, you know, none of you are up to it yet, but camp, going to sleepaway camp, like when they go to day camp, your three-year-old can't get his wet bathing suit down and up by himself. He needs help. So the boundary is they can help you if they pull on your hips. Also, he's learning the word hips. So they're allowed to pull on the hips. They're not allowed to pull on the front and the back and whatever you call that, your tush. But because that's not SNEAS. So that's a boundary. Once they go to sleepaway camp, before they go to sleepaway camp, you explain to them that you have paid money for them to go to camp. The money covers all of their food and their bed and all the trips and all the activities and the canteen. And everybody else's parents paid also. And every child is given his or her own bed. And no one's allowed in their bed. And that they are, have to follow, again, you know, there are boundaries to the camp. You will have a, they'll take you on a walk or they'll show you where the camp Eruv is. The Eruv is the boundary of the camp. You can't go out of that. You can't go out by yourself, and you can't go out with a friend, and you can't go out with a counselor unless there's a very good reason. And if you feel like you don't want to go alone with that person, you have a right to say no. The boundary piece is trust your judgment, know what the boundaries are, and you can enforce your own. Some people love to be touched and hugged, and some people hate it. No one has a right to hug someone. There was a little boy, and he had a truly loving, affectionate kindergarten teacher. And she would hug the kids, and she would kiss them on their birthdays. And it was my friend's son, and he said to his mother, "I'm not going to let Maura Susan kiss me on my birthday. I'm not one of these kissy kids." So the mother wrote a note, you know, "David does not want a kiss on his birthday." That is wonderful. He was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old. He was allowed to say, "I don't want a kiss on my birthday." He shouldn't have to have one. So teaching them that they can trust what doesn't feel comfortable for them is very, very important.
What if you have just the opposite?
That they want to hug and kiss everyone.
Yes. My daughter is so affectionate. If you say hello to her, then by the second time, hello, and hugs you and all.
Okay, so then you're going to teach her what's a boundary. You can say that we don't hug people if they don't want to be hugged. The same way we don't touch people if they don't want to be touched. You don't know what this person wants or likes or doesn't like. So I can't let you make someone else feel uncomfortable. If it's somebody that they know and they want to hug them, you can say, you have to ask first, can I hug you? I'm so happy to see you. I'd love to give you a hug. Is that okay? Some children want to buy friendship by giving away snacks and money. And so then talking about... Is it 10:30? Because he was one of the presenters.
No, Dr. Ressler is coming in next to us.
I know. I just saw people walking and they said we have to end. Okay. Okay. So, I was talking about getting permission to touch.
Yeah.
Explain to them. Some people love it, and some, your daughter, you can teach her. Some children like to touch and some don't. And some adults like to touch and some don't. Or you're not allowed to touch me while I'm carrying food to the table because I could drop it. Or you're not allowed to touch somebody when they're eating because they just want to concentrate on eating. Or at bedtime, you can get an extra hug. But I'm not sure you want us to be hugging in front of the class. Do you think your friends will make fun of you? Having awareness to socially acceptable behavior is another thing that children need to learn. Because otherwise children can be merciless. So you want to protect them from that. When kids are getting toilet trained, they're a riot. So I know it doesn't feel like they're a riot when you're doing it. But if you look objectively, it's like they're perfectly okay running around without underwear because it makes life easier. It goes faster. And you say, well, we do it in the house, but you're not running around the playground with no pants on. So that's not something you can do. And if you have a younger child and you eat that, you know, do raspberries on that kid's belly, you could say, you could do that to a newborn, you could do it to a baby, but you don't see me letting people give me raspberries on my belly because I'm too old for that. And there are things that are okay when you're 3 and not okay when you're 5, certainly not okay when you're 7. Parents have a really hard time. One of the boundaries of kids who either suck their thumbs or use pacifiers or slap their blankets around, you need to start setting boundaries before they really want them. So, okay, you could still have your pacifier, but here's a new boundary. You can't take it wherever you want. Now you can only use your pacifier in the house. Then a new boundary. You can only have it in your bed. You know, you're establishing those boundaries all the time.
I think I wanted to ask about is that our problem is not always setting the boundaries. My son is very, very persistent. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of, sometimes feel like we're fighting all the time about the same nonsense. Like, for example, we have a radio, and he loves to put in his favorite CD, and he loves to listen to the CD. So he says, Mommy, can I put on music? Okay, you can put on some music. Puts on the music. It's on for 2 minutes, and he's just excited about using it, and then he wants to take it out, and then he wants to put it back in, and then he wants to switch a song, and then he wants to... So, like, sometimes he'll say, okay, you want to change the song? Okay, you can change the song, because I don't want him to feel like... I don't want to be saying no all the time.
Right.
But again, he's so persistent that by the end of this whole encounter with the radio, it almost... always, and I feel like this about a lot of things, and we almost inevitably end up fighting about something. He ends up crying, I get frustrated, and it's just kind of like, how do you, you know, and then sometimes you're sticking to your guns about something that, like, you don't even really care about because you want to make a point. And
right.
It's like, how do you, I don't know, make them listen to the reaction and stop asking or whatever.
So if it's not important, let's start with the easy one. If you don't care, say yes. And decide in advance, so you know you're going to have this game with the CD. So say to him in advance, how about you put it in and we listen to 4 songs. Because we never listen to song 2 and 3, and I'd love to hear the first 4. No, I want to hear only the first 2. Okay, we'll only hear the first 2. You established a boundary in advance. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say yes right away. If you're going to say no, stick with it. Because if it's not important, then you feel so nice saying yes. And he knows there are times he'll ask for something, he gets an instant yes, and we're done. So that's a great, and they're like sandpaper. They just want to wear you down. Yes. And when you're tired and it's the end of the day, so for yourself, build in self-care time. Meaning, if he goes to preschool, so use the 15 minutes before he comes home or before you pick him up to just do something that makes you relax and say to yourself, okay, this is what we're going to do this afternoon. Also, with three-year-olds, you can sometimes distract him. So you can say, leave on the tape and let's go. You'll help me fold the laundry. We'll play with your Play-Doh, whatever. If you refocused him, it often works okay. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, now's not a good time for the tape, the CD, but we'll listen to it in the car. So it's hard to delay gratification, but we all need to learn that. And then you can say to him before you leave the house, don't forget the CD, because we're going to let, because he might have forgotten. Mm-hmm. But you want him to know that not only didn't you forget, but you respected his request. And if he says, I don't want to listen to it now, you can say, okay, that's your choice, and I respect that.
Well, he's very big on that, that once you say no about something, then he, like, you've ruined it forever.
Forever.
I mean, for forever.
For him, yeah. For his forever.
For the day.
Right.
He gets very, very upset, and, you know, so I say, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example where he gets very upset, and I say, well, whatever, if I think he needs a timeout, I say, right. Okay, you know, you need a timeout, come sit down, you know. Relax, you know, and then when you're ready to behave, when you're ready to, I don't know, not hit your sister, when you're ready to listen to the music nicely and not be messing around with it, not play the, you know, the stove or whatever it is, and you can come out, and then he'll sit and he'll just say, no, and then I'll go in a few minutes and say, okay, you ready to come out? Good. No, I don't want to come out. So, okay, another few minutes, come back in. You want to come out? No.
So don't keep going back in.
I don't want to do this.
Don't go back in. Say to him, when you feel ready, come out.
Yeah, time out is over. So when you are ready and you collect yourself and you're okay, you can come out any time you want. Then in 2 seconds, he'll...
Right.
So probably we do that sometimes and he won't come out. For like,
okay.
Like,
bake some cookies and he'll come out when he smells them and tantalizer.
Or even things about like, well, even that, not baking cookies, but even food. If the problem is, I don't know, something at dinner... So we say, okay, you need to come, like, you can't behave like that. This is not behavior for the table. You need to come down. You need to whatever when you're ready to come
right.
out. The problem is, like, he wants to eat dinner.
Right.
He won't do it because he knows he knows I want him to. Not
right.
that he knows I want him to. But he knows that, like, we got mad about dinner and this is the problem. And sometimes I can say, like, sometimes I can
right.
distract him with a
mess.
Distract him with, you know, try to get him back
right.
in a different way. But sometimes he's so stubborn that he just won't. Doesn't matter how hungry he is. He doesn't
right.
care. Like,
he'll go to sleep without dinner.
He would rather go to sleep without dinner than to give in.
Oh,
he can want. He can
like,
want. It's right. He's
for
not going to fade
night,
away.
He doesn't eat
right. dinner.
Everybody who finished dinner, oh, we're going to have ice cream next.
And that doesn't always work either.
He won't care.
He's
stubborn.
He's that persistent and that stubborn.
What is his favorite? If it is his absolute favorite, that's what you save for those moments.
I know. It sounds...
Even if
it's unbelievable, but he really can
no,
hold
just
out.
Have to,
he will hold out.
And that's okay.
Right. That's okay. He chose that. And you can say that. Okay, so you decided not to eat dinner tonight. That's fine. Depending on how important it is, you can say, if he needs to do something that he's refusing to do, you can say, you know, I'm sad because I'm not going to be able to read you a story tonight because you're not doing that.
And then when he comes in on a different time, and he comes, I'm so happy you came back to the
right.
table. You're getting your special dessert today. Thank you so much for getting yourself together. And coming
I'm
back
so proud of you. I'm not a big fan of giving extra dessert just because, you know, then he's going to worry up about being overweight, and he's going to associate food with
desserts
reward.
Desserts are not always cakes. Dessert
no,
can be an
but
apple or
for
anything
sure.
else. And
but I prefer a reward to be parent-child time. I'll give you an extra 5 minutes before bed when we can chat, or I'll read you an extra story, or I don't know, whatever he, you know, loves to do with you. You're going to help me set the table tonight. And or you're going to make the platter, and when Abba says how beautiful it is, I'm going to be able to say, oh, look at this. Dovey did it. Mm-hmm. So that's just because I just think the parent-child relationship is so important. Even an extra hug. Can I give you an extra hug? You were so wonderful now. That's what people want. Okay, our time is up. Thank you.
Thank you.